Glenn, please join me here. And we know that you hail originally from Australia. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to ask you this morning, how does a men's breakfast down under compare in terms of food to a men's breakfast here? Has this civilization of the full English reached you all the way down there?
It has. No, we do like a full English, but yes, because we might be able to cook outdoors, that might open up a few more options in Australia, but the full English is very good, and we're very grateful. Thank you.
Barbecued eggs. Glenn, over to you.
Okay. Brilliant. So, the trouble with freedom and why none of us actually have it. I don't know what springs to mind when you think about the topic of freedom. I'm going to be free to do what I want any old time. That's kind of the way we tend to think about freedom. Freedom as independence. I was in my newsagents on the day that Parliament voted to say yes to triggering Article 50. And on the newsstands, there were two newspapers next to each other. There was the I, and there was the Daily Express. And the I said it was a leap into the unknown. And the Daily Express says it was a bold leap forwards. Okay, so what is it? What kind of leap is this? What kind of step are we taking? Is it a leap into the unknown, into the darkness? And there was a big picture of sort of darkness going on. Or is it a step forwards, a step of independence? We tend to think in terms of independence, don't we? When we think of freedom, that I've got this sphere of my rights and nobody can tell me what to do. And don't come into my life and tell me how to order my affairs, because I'm free. But there's a problem with freedom, and we all know what the problem with freedom is. We've already been mentioning a few political kinds of freedom in our conversation, and one of our friends has just said that in Zimbabwe we became free in 1980, and that's when all the trouble started. Someone else said in South Africa they have a saying, they fought for freedom, and then what they got was democracy. What a disappointment. What is freedom? How do we think of freedom? Sometimes I think of Freshers Weeks. I go around the country doing quite a lot of student stuff, and quite often I'm invited into a university in Freshers Week, and here are a whole bunch of people who feel like they're getting free. And I really understand that. I remember being taken to university by my mother and having packed away the last box, and my mother was about to return to the car and leave me and return to the empty nest. And here I was, making my bold leap into the unknown. And I'll never forget what she said. I'm very embarrassed by it. I think even she's embarrassed by it now, because I keep repeating it so often. But she looked at me, and with a single tear coming down the cheek, she said, "Glenn, just fly, Glenn, just fly." And I think I said something like, "Yes, but only because you're the wind beneath my wings, mother." And, you know, because I think sarcasm is my love language. So that was how I showed affection. But we kind of know what she means, though. We know that somehow in Freshers, what you've just left home, and you're meant to fly, you're meant to be free. And yet, when you look around Freshers Weeks, you've never seen such lost people in all your life, right? I mean, physically, they're lost. You know, they don't know where anything is. They don't know where the lecture theater is. They don't know where the library is. And 3 years later, they still don't know where the lecture theater is or the library is. And also spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, they're lost because they're trying to figure out who they are. And so the philosophy of the day is to seek to find yourself, isn't it? You're feeling lost, and so you try to find yourself. And in Freshers Week, you're signing up to every single society that you can. You're making all these new kinds of friends. You're trying to find yourself. But have you thought about how nuts that is? If you're lost, the last person you need to find is yourself, because you're lost. And finding a lost person is never much help. Have you ever found a lost person and you're lost? They say, "I'm just lost too, mate. I'm sorry." If you're lost, what do you need to find? You need to find home. And then when you find home, then you can just be yourself. But so often we don't want to find home. What we want to find is independence. And then that can be a very, very lonely thing. I was talking to a woman just on Wednesday night. And She really resonated with one of our stories. James Schoen had lost his sight. She says, I've lost my sight too, and it's dreadful because I used to be so independent. And now I have to rely on everyone. It's dreadful. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, that's terrible, and nothing can take away from how terrible that is. But we weren't meant for independence, were we? And she thought about it, and she said, you know what, actually, it's opened me up to relying on relationships around me. And I've made the best friends in my entire life since I've actually started to go blind, because I've started to rely on people. And she actually testified, you know what, independence is very, very lonely. And we think going for independence will make us free. What if it just makes you lost? What if we're already lost? And what if erecting the barriers and saying, I have my sphere of sovereignty, is the last thing we need? What if we need help? What if we need to find home? I'm going to mention a few verses from John's Gospel. We've got some John's Gospels for you at the end, and we'd love you to pick one up and have a read for yourself. It's the biography of Jesus, one of the four in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Here's John. And Jesus has some famous words to say about freedom. I'm sure even if you've never cracked open a Bible before, you've probably heard these words before. But I just thought I'd read them to you, and they'll be up on the screen as well, these words that Jesus speaks about freedom. To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Have you heard that? Everyone's heard that, right? Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free? Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. So here I think Jesus is pointing to three different realities about freedom that you really need to grasp. If we're going to actually be free, we need to grasp these three things. And the first thing is that it's the truth that will set you free. And so often we don't think the truth will set us free. So often we just think that getting away from everybody will set us free. Being my own boss will set us free. And Jesus comes to planet Earth and he claims to be the truth with a capital T. He's the one who made us, according to John's Gospel. Here is God in the flesh encountering us. He is this truth. And he comes to us and he says, look, sorry to say, actually, you're not the king. There is a truth that is beyond you. And if you do not go with the grain of this truth, you're going to get splinters. It's not going to work. You're not going to be free by rejecting this truth. Freedom exists along with the grain of the universe, and you can't really go against that. There is a truth that you need to live by in order to be free, and I guess we kind of get this. I love the episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes into space. Have you seen this one? Early on in The Simpsons, and he's doing some experiments with this ant farm in zero gravity. And somehow Homer gets free from his seatbelt, and he's just sort of careering through the cabin of the space station, and he starts to crash into this ant farm. And all of a sudden we hear the ants chirruping to one another, and there's the subtitles below what they're saying. So, you know, one person is saying, you know, protect the queen, and then the other person says, which one's the queen? And then Homer is getting closer and closer to the ant farm, and he smashes into it, and all these ants suddenly get released into zero gravity. And one of the ants chirrups and says, freedom, horrible, horrible freedom. Because there is an environment in which freedom is enjoyed. And when you're not in that environment, you're not free. Those ants are not more free because they are out of the ant farm. The ant farm was the truth for them. That was the environment in which they can flourish and thrive. And to be released from that environment is not to become more free. You know, the goldfish who just wants to get out of the tank and be free, they find themselves much less free when they're spluttering around on the carpet, okay? That's not where freedom is found. What if there is an environment in which freedom is found? What if there is a truth? Jesus says his teaching can set us free. There's actually a reality that can come to us from beyond and set us free, and Christians will testify. You know, you pick up John's Gospel, he starts to make sense of your world. He turns it right side up, and And far from being an imposition that enslaves you, it's a truth that sets you free. So that's the first thing Jesus says. He says, there's a truth beyond you that can set you free. And then he says, look, the problem with freedom is not really the constraints that are out there. The problem with freedom is your heart in here, right? This is the problem. The problem with freedom is me, okay? It's fascinating in verse 33 that the Jews are saying, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone, which is just so historically ignorant and blind. I mean, Jesus could have come back at them and said, you've been slaves of everyone. What are you talking about? I mean, Israel has been slaves of Egypt, of Assyria, of Philistine, of Babylon, of Persia, of Greece. Who hasn't? Who hasn't Israel been a slave of? As they say this, they're currently really the slaves of Rome. As they say this. And yet, this is kind of the self-deception we have. I'm free, baby. I'm totally free, right? And we just don't know the slavery and the extent of slavery that is in our own lives. What's the problem? Well, Jesus says, verse 34, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. So there is a problem within us that makes us unfree. And philosophers for 3,000 years have sort of noticed that the human condition, we're a bit like a chariot that is driven by two horses. The only trouble is the two horses are going in different directions, right? This is the human condition. Pulled this way, pulled that way, pulled this way, pulled that way. And our big problem is that we lie to ourselves about all of this. You know, just as the Jews were lying to themselves about their own state of freedom, we lie to ourselves and we get trapped by that lie. Happens, doesn't it? You tell a lie about something and what happens next? You've got to tell another lie. And you've got to remember the lies that you just told. And you become a slave to those lies that you tell. So often the sins that we commit, the selfishness, the mucked upness that's in us, is about lying to the world. And you can lie to the world with words, you can lie to the world with your bluster, you can lie to the world with your CV, you can lie to the world in how you carry yourself. But as soon as you lie to the world, you got to catch up with that lie and tell another one and tell another one and tell another one. And it snowballs and it snowballs and you're not free. You're just not free. So there are the lies that we tell that enslave us, and then there's also the lies that we believe that enslave us. Don't we look out at the world and we just think, you know what, if I just had her, I know I shouldn't, but if I just had her, she would solve everything. It's a total lie, isn't it? It's a total lie. I've got a friend who's he's bigger than Will Stileman, actually. 6'7". Are you sitting there? How tall are you? 6'3", 6'4", yeah. So he dwarfs Will Stileman, okay. Big, rough policeman. And he just sees these young constables, one after the other. And he sees so many of them just going wayward, just going, if I just had her. And she's not your wife, buddy. If I just had her, everything would be okay. And he's got a great line with her. He says, yeah, it's great to begin with. But in 6 months, all it means is just pushing a trolley around Tesco's. That's all it'll end up with, pushing a trolley around Tesco's. That's the nature of the lies that we buy into. Oh, if I just had this. And maybe it's not a woman. Who knows what it is? Who knows what this thing is that's lying to you? You think, if I just had it, my goodness, I'd suddenly become alive. This is what life would be. If I just had it, in 6 months' time, it's just pushing a trolley around Tesco's. That's all it is. It's just a lie. And then suddenly, you're a slave. That's how it works. So this idea that I will be free if only I get everyone the hell out of my life and just do what I want to do, that's the problem. Us doing what we want to do in that selfish sense, that is exactly the problem. That's exactly how you become a slave. You look at the most addicted people in life, who have had their lives absolutely trashed. You know what they've done? They've done what they've wanted to do. At every stage, you ask them, what did you do? I just did what I wanted to do. And then the next thing, I just did what I wanted to do, and I did what I wanted to do, and I did what I wanted to do, and my life is ruined. There's something wrong in here, right? In the heart. So Jesus wants us to get real. He says, actually, there's a truth, there's a reality, there's a grain of the cosmos that you need to kind of work with. There's a truth out there. And when you know the truth, you'll be set free. There's a problem in here. There's a heart that is moronic. My heart is moronic. My heart naturally goes after the things that do not set me free, but that actually enslave me. But then Jesus says there's a relationship where true freedom is found. It's beautiful. Very truly, I tell you, verse 34, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. A son belonging to a family. And then Jesus says, so if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I don't know where you feel most you. When are you home? You know, we thought about the freshers going after this experience, that experience, trying to get free, ending up lost. Where is home for you? I was speaking to a girl a couple of months ago, and she said, you know, after being away from the family home for a number of years, she was about 23, but she just loves to come back into the family kitchen and to sit down with her back to the oven and have the dog just running all over. That's home. That's home. And, you know, actually, for as much as you might want to leave the family home in order to get free, if you have a home in which you're safe, you never feel more free than when you're there, right? And Jesus says there is a family home. There is a place where we don't need to find ourselves. We can just be ourselves. And when you can just be yourself, my goodness, aren't you free? My goodness, can't you just walk out into the world with a sense of poise and dignity? And you can act from a center that is secure. You know who you are, and then there's nothing to lose, nothing to prove, nothing to hide. You're free if you find home. So what is home? Well, I guess Jesus diagnoses the problem in the most famous story he ever tells. Do you know the story of the prodigal son? Jesus tells this story in another biography, in Luke's Gospel. And he tells the story of two boys. There's a dad with two boys, and the younger boy says, I want my share of the inheritance now. He's basically saying, Dad, you know all that money that's coming to me when you die? You seem to be taking your time. Could you please either hurry up and die, or can I have all your stuff now so I can get as far away from you as I possibly can? Love your son, right? And so often we think of the prodigal son as he's a bit of a ragamuffin, isn't he? And he's, he's scum. He's scum. This boy is scum. You do not treat your dad like this boy has treated his dad, especially not when your dad is as good as this dad is. Amazingly, in the story, the dad just says, fine, you don't want me? Okay. I'm going to hand you over to what you want. And if you've ever had to deal with an addict, for instance, you realize that giving the addict exactly what they want is a judgment, right? If someone's going to blow all their money on drugs and you say, here, have 10 grand, right? That's a judgment, isn't it? Have exactly what you want. If your heart is going astray, being told to do what you want is only going to make you further astray. And you know this boy, he thinks he's just hit the jackpot. Packs up his bag into the far country, squanders the money in wild living, and the money runs out. The money always runs out. And he ends up in a pigsty. It always ends up in a pigsty. And he's far from home. He has wanted to get free, and he's ended up lost. Because that's what radical independence is. It's not freedom. Radical independence is getting lost. And he's utterly lost. And yet, when he's far from home, he thinks to himself, you know what, my dad, he's a good guy, actually. I wonder if, and he goes back home, and it's this wonderful scene of the father running to meet this scumbag son, flinging his arms around him, kissing this boy, taking off his best robe, putting the robe on this putrid boy. And you know, in that moment, as this son is welcomed home, he's never been more free in his life. Wrapped up in the arms of his dad, he's free. Still stinking of pigsty, he's free. Because freedom is not about radical independence. Freedom is about finding home, finding the relationship that you are made for. And Jesus, the Son of God, has come from the ultimate family. He's come down into our lostness. He's come down into our pigsty. And he said, it hasn't worked, has it? Hasn't worked. Will you come home? And anyone who says, yeah, Jesus, I think you're telling the truth. I think you're telling the truth. I'm going to trust you. And anyone who says, you know what, actually, my own heart, that's been the problem. Sorry about that. Anyone who says, Jesus, I think you're telling the truth. I trust you. My heart has been going astray. I'm sorry about that. I want to come home. Jesus says, when the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. He carries you home, and then all of a sudden you get his Father as your Father. You get his Spirit as your Spirit. You get his sense of poise and freedom as your sense of poise and freedom. You get his future as your future. It's for free, and it's forever. Why wouldn't you want that? You know, Mumford and Sons have that song. They sing about there's a love that will not betray, dismay, or enslave you, but will set you free to be more like the man you are made to be. Is there a love like that? Is there someone from home who's come to find you and bring you home? Is there a love that will not betray, dismay, or enslave you, but will set you free? Christians say absolutely, and he's available today. So we would love if you could keep investigating about this Jesus. You could even shoot up a prayer now and say, Jesus, help, I want you. He'll hear. He moved heaven to earth to hear. He went to hell and back to bring you home. He'll hear. Just call out now. Pick up one of these John's Gospels. We've got plenty on the table at the back. Keep on reading about this Jesus. And we've also got a course called Life Explored. And over 7 weeks, you can come and ask any question you like about the Christian faith. We won't put you on the spot. We won't pepper you with questions. You can pepper us with questions. And you can ask about this Jesus, this teaching that he has. Am I really that bad? Is my heart really that perverse? And can Jesus really offer me freedom? You can ask all those questions over 7 weeks. It starts on the 8th of May at 7:30, right there in that building with a meal. Hey, they'll even feed you. How good is that? So we'd love you to sign up for that. There are ways of signing up. Are there, John? Maybe? Yeah, there are ways of signing up, and John can let you know. But I'm just going to hand back to John now, and we might have time for Q&A. I don't know.
Glenn, thank you very much indeed. We do indeed have a few minutes for questions. It's great to actually think together as a group about these things, and we can ask our questions and learn from what each other are asking. Let me give us 30 seconds just to think quietly if there is something we'd like to ask, and then we'll put Glenn in the hot seat with a few questions, I hope. Great. Does anyone have a question to ask? I'll try and work around. We'll see how many we can cover. John.
Yes, Glenn, you spend a lot of time going around talking in the way that you do to people. And I guess you must have lots of one-on-one conversations with people after such a talk. For you, what comes across as being the main reason why people can't make
The entire narrative of a culture is that freedom is independence. So for 20 minutes, I can tell people that's a lie, and people can see that, I think. But for the rest of their waking life, they're told that freedom is doing what you want any old time. So there's that kind of cultural narrative that's happening. But I think deep down, it's about a matter of the heart. The lies that we tell and the lies that we believe are powerful, you know. I wanna think of myself as a king who really can stride through this world as the master of all I survey. And I don't want to face the fact that actually my deepest desires are what are enslaving me. And so I can give a talk like this, and yet, you know, if the person is in an inappropriate relationship they shouldn't be in, right? And it's very difficult for my words to compete with whoever that person is, for instance. But I think that person is not just an example of our hearts going astray. I think it's the paradigm of our hearts going astray. You don't have to be in love with a person in order
to lie to yourself and in order to enslave yourself. You could fall in love with a job, you could fall in love with anything and do that. The heart is that powerful. So, you know, if you've got a friend with an addiction and you try to get them out, if you stand between your friend and what they're addicted to, they turn feral, right? What if the human race is like that? What if we're all addicts? So we're in a fight, but I think the real power is coming from the human heart and what we perversely and foolishly love. Yeah.
James, yes.
So hard. I was talking to some parenting groups this week and talking particularly to mothers about how difficult it is, especially when the last child goes off to university. And one parent mentioned a verse in Proverbs that says, raise a child up in the way they should go, and when they leave, you know, they will not depart from that way. But the thing with Proverbs is it's talking about averages, right? It's not talking about concrete in every single case. If you teach a child the right thing to do, then they will always do it. Nonsense, right? We all know that that's not 100% rule. What's interesting about that verse is that actually the verb for raise a child up, you could also translate as get rid of them, right? So parenting is getting rid of your kids, okay? And actually, there's something in a parent's heart that you need to be aware that this child has been entrusted to you for only a few years. And it's the hardest thing in the world to say, fly, Glenn, fly, right? Which is why the single tear is coming down my mother's face, because it's the hardest thing in the world to actually get rid of them. But so partly it's about the heart of the grandparent or the parent to say, okay, God is bigger than this situation, and I feel out of control because I would love my kids to know the truth and for the truth to set them free. I would love that. But on some level, you've got to do business with God and say, okay, my job has been to get rid of them, and I put them in your hands, and I pray for them because prayer is powerful. So the first thing to do is to figure out in your own heart what's going on, that these children and grandchildren, they're not yours. But there is a God who's bigger than that, and we can pray to that God. Those are some of the beginnings of things I'd say. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, Tim.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and because we have such anemic views of eternal life, as though it's just enjoying Novocaine in the ninth dimension and floating around like and yet, if we are Easter people, if we are Jesus people, it's Jesus who shows us what eternal life looks like. And so this is why I love to read to the end of the Gospels, and there you see a snapshot of the kind of eternity that Jesus is talking about. Every different religion has a wildly different understanding of what eternity looks like. Wildly different. And so often, the eternity that we think of is not a particularly Christian one. The Christian eternal life that Jesus has pioneered for us by dying, rising again, coming out the other side, you look at him and you see what it is to live beyond death. And what does Jesus do in the Gospels? He goes for long country walks with friends. He goes fishing with mates. Barbecues on the beach. Sounds like Australia, doesn't it? Sounds just glorious, right? And it is, and it's physical, embodied, personal, joy-filled feasting with friends, right? Who doesn't want that, you know? So it's not Novocaine in the ninth dimension. It's this embodied, physical, feasting joy that Jesus is talking about. So I'd direct people to the end of the Gospels and just have a look. This is what Jesus is talking about. Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else with a question? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 And that's in any area of life. So in sport, you put in the 10,000 hours of training, and then you're a master of it. You know, you're a musician. You put in the 10,000 hours of training, and you're a virtuoso. You're a soldier, and discipline, but then get you onto the battlefield and you know what to do, and if you didn't have that discipline, you're dead. So absolutely, we see how this works in every area of life. Now, I'll always remember, when was it that Wayne Rooney was very famously sent off? Was it in a Euros or was it in a World Cup? I'm talking about 15 years ago or something, and I still remember Andy Townsend saying in the commentator's booth, he said, "I just wish that Wayne Rooney's mother had said no to him once." It's just a brilliant line. But we know what happens when there's no discipline, right? It's not that the child becomes more free, they become less free. And that's just a deep truth of what our hearts are like. In so many ways, we're still like kids, and we still do need discipline. But from that discipline, you can fly. Yeah.
Glenn, thanks so much for speaking for us, and particularly for fielding those questions. Should we express our appreciation for Glenn and for the Cooks once again?